The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi, I'm Paco Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And this is Sup Doc.
And today's episode concludes our mayhem month of true crime doc.
We talked to comedian Cassine Bentley and Lauren Stanton about the iconic doc Central Park 5. Filmmakers Ken Burns, Sarah Burns, and David McMahon examine a 1989 case of five teenagers who were wrongfully convicted of raping a woman. After they had spent from 6 to 13 years in prison, a serial rapist confessed to the crime.
Recorded in the basement of the world-famous Comedy Store in L.A., Cassine and Lauren talk about being black in the U.S., false accusations, crime, and a whole lot more.
And now, here's Cassine and Lauren. Okay, so we're here with our guest, Cassine Bentley.
Hey.
Hey, Cassine. And Lauren Stanton.
Hi.
Hello. And, of course, George Chen is
Hi,
here.
I'm George Chen.
There he is.
I never thought I'd be in the Comedy Store in this room.
He's so excited.
Big day. Big day.
It is a big day. When we first walked in, George was like, I own this place. This is going to be my place. And I was like, George, you just keep it up.
I have a lot of faith in myself.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, he did. but we're here to talk about the documentary Central Park 5. I was telling Lauren earlier, my family, we watch this every Christmas morning.
Feel good movie.
Yep. It's a feel good movie. Gets us ready to go. Makes it feel classic Ken Burns. Can we just all agree for once?
People are alive though. That's different.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
It's not
I would love
voiceover.
It if it was directed by Edward Burns. You know what I mean? Just narrated, just like five young youth coming in. You know, just makes a cameo somewhere. That'd be really good. It is classic Ken Burns. I mean, it's, you know, from the editing to the slow pacing, I mean, just from the denseness, it was, you know, like pretty dense, like an old biscuit. You know what I mean? And you just have to take it. But it was. I love it. I watched it three times, so it's great.
When's the first time you watched this?
On Christmas.
Yeah. Cassine comes over.
They run it on a loop on BET. It's like a Christmas story. It's like, you leave at noon, you come back at 3, you're right where you started. It's like, he went to jail again? This thing is amazing. It changes every time, you know? But yeah, I watched it. I think I watched it when, I think a homeboy, Rasul, he told me, we always known about it. You know what I mean?
The case. Like you knew about the case.
Yeah, my dad had talked about it because he's from New York. And he was always kind of like, you know, when you're from New York and you're socially conscious, you always have to stay abreast of what's happening. You always get some kind of weird double photocopied newsletter. You see what the newsletter is called. You see what happened, brother? You know what I mean? This is an outrage. That's the other one. That's the offshoot. This is an outrage. So I always knew about it, but I just didn't know to the severity of, like, you know, like I didn't know past the 90s what happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I was always kind of like intrigued by it, but it was incredible. It felt like Spike Lee could have done this, but he might have been too busy making movies that nobody wanted to see.
In 2012, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Post Red
Inside
Hook.
Man. What year was that?
That Inside Man was probably no.
Inside Man's like the last
Santa
one
Anna,
I've seen. I
Santa
think
Santa Ana was sick.
Santa what? Ant? I don't know that one.
Yeah, the one about the black soldiers? That was fire. Spike knew he wasn't going to get any more chances after that. Because he was like, black soldier story? And was it Red Tails? I'm kidding you. And we're going to put every kind of blood. We put, you know, it's because Red Tails was like, they put Method Man in it. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, we're really just going to give
you. Just throw everybody in that. Yeah. They had Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, Sherman Hemsley or something. He's just doing a dance.
The late Sherman.
But no, I saw it three times. I think this time when you take a more critical look about media and their relationship to African Americans and to their portrayal of it, that was when I was kind of like, this is going to be something that, you know, if you're, because like, when I went to State, there was a lot of classes that dealt with African Americans in the media. And so what I was really tripped out about was, was about, like, from day one, you learn that media outlets will have certain trigger words, you know, that will get, draw you
dog whistle kind of shit, yeah.
Yeah, like, when they explain white people when they do crimes, they say group, assemblage, you know what I mean? When they do black people, it's pack.
Mm-hmm.
You know what right. I mean? Right. Real, like, you know what I mean? Man. Mel Gibson shit, like, a pack of niggas kind of shit, you know? You're like, what the fuck? Like, I ain't never been a pack of no, you know what I mean? I've been in a group, I've been in a series, but not right. a pack, you know? Yeah.
No group of white boys have ever widening.
No,
we Wilding.
Wilding.
Yeah.
Why didn't Nick Cannon call it that? I don't know.
That's his statue. You don't
Wilding
know. That's
out.
Wilding Out is his homage to the Central Park Five.
Wilding.
Originally, it was about them doing improv about social injustice. But then MTV's like, I think this is too black for us.
Hey, can you guys just improv that?
Just wearing turbans with Nick Cannon.
Yes, and each other.
No, like, I did think about, like, that line jumped out at me when there's that line of, like, everyone had to reevaluate, like, the institutional reckoning or whatever, except the media. The media didn't really reevaluate themselves after this. They're just like all the headlines and Wolfpack, I believe, was one of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Wilding, Wolfpack, Gang, Monsters,
That's the big one. That's the major
kind of
one.
Still
thugs is
ongoing.
Like, for sure. Yeah. Pack of Thugs, Wild Pack of Thugs.
Like, I love it that we just can't just be us, you know what I mean? Even when the idea of crime, you know what I mean?
I mean, they were kids at the end of the day. Like, they're kids. They're children. They're 14.
Yeah. I was thinking about, like, that's what makes us so different from, like, other true crime shit you look at. Like, we just did, like, West Memphis 3. I'm like, this is so paralleled. Do you guys know that story?
I've heard about it.
Yeah, it's, like, three kids. That, like, there's no DNA evidence. It ends up being DNA evidence of another dude. But they get out of jail on a weird kind of technical thing where they're, like, admit you did it, but then publicly you can say
then
you're
innocent.
Then
you'll actually go home. Except in this one, it's like, admit that you did it, and surprise, you're in jail for 13
years. Like, all that.
Surprise.
That's a bait and switch. That's for real.
A lot of parallel stuff. I mean, I was, even with, Weiss, the guy, was he even there? I was like, one of the guys wasn't even there, right? One of the guys was just, they ran into him at the apartment complex. And then the cops were just like, oh, you were with him? Okay, just come down with us.
They were trying to say that. They were like, he was with them earlier and then he left.
Right.
That was the one that had the DNA that had actually done it.
Matthias. That's a different. Yeah, yeah. I think there's the guy who did like a 13-year stretch is the guy I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Corey Weiss.
Corey Weiss, that's right. Yeah. Because he also had like the hearing problem too. Right. I was just feeling so bad for this kid. Yeah. Like, you can just kind of see when he's on camera, like, in 2012, he's, like, shaken still. Like, he's, like, not all there.
Took so many years of his life, and now he has to come out, like, everything's fine.
Dude, I feel cool. I was almost the same age as those guys at that time, I think. So it's, like, it's so weird to see that, like, sort of, like, imagine being 14, 15, you never dealt with the cops before, and then you're just, like, in an interrogation situation.
Without a lawyer, without your parents. You got some big-ass adult cops looking at you.
Also, some of the parents did not know what was up because their parents didn't get lawyers when they did that. Right. When they did the videotape confessions. There's like, hey, my mom's here. She's not a lawyer.
Right.
Get a lawyer.
Yeah, but my mom's here, yeah.
But see, here's the thing about it. I read after right before I watched it, and I was like, what, read like three articles on it. And one thing that they're talking about the case is about how they coerced and manipulated the parents and everybody involved, because every child had somebody involved with them, and it was always some way kind of misconduct. Like the fact that they had the person, the mom, the mom who was disabled.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
And what they said to her was actually using like these ableist terms that she couldn't understand and manipulation to be like, you know, kind of like that Jedi mind trick. What happens with a lot of time when when IA comes involved in police cases where it's like you make the person feel as though they're incapable of understanding the whole process because it's not really just about the vernacular or anything. It's really just about emotions and testing your emotional intelligence. Like, well, if you can understand Mrs. You know, Smith, then this is a very like, case and you're right now, you're crippled. You know what I mean? It's like you're crippled. You know, you're sitting here. You can't understand everything. Yeah. Wouldn't you want to sit outside and have a coffee and understand he's a Danish. You know what I mean?
Send your 14-year-old daughter in instead.
And then they do the thing where they time the people too, well, how long they tell the people it would take. Yeah. So they'll be like, hey, come back and like, we'll be done in like 10 minutes. Go upstairs, get yourself a Starbucks. That's a new thing going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a new thing.
Nothing's wrong with that company. You know, that's a matter.
That's
great.
Right. Not yet.
You know, go to Starbucks. Don't order anything.
Inevitably.
Everyone loves it. You know what I mean? You got this new thing. Use your computer.
Right.
It's like, so that's the horrible thing, because that's really about one part about the documentary is really looking at a study about study about how police corruption in the instance of dealing with juvenile justice. Mm-hmm. You know, because I used to work with kids in juvenile, and you would hear like ombudsmen who were kind of like the liaison between the legal system, the clients and juvenile hall. And you would say, like, let's say you were like a crooked, like,
let's say
he's pointing at George.
Yeah, I'm pointing at George. I'm
taking this Paco, microphone.
Paco is the nice guy that would end up getting beaten up in the halls. It's like, hey man, you want a soda? you look like a Sprite man.
Stop it!
Put my underwear down. It's like, hey, take this ass whooping. You know what I mean? Something. So that's the whole thing. I think that there were some parts where I really enjoyed. I enjoyed a lot of it. But there were many parts where I wish they could freeze frame on just, you know, the officers or come back around and the reporter, you know. Mm-hmm. But in terms of looking at the reporters who were manipulating all the parents, and I really felt for the mom. I forget whose mom was. I got the kids up here. But the handicapped mom, I really would love to have had more have her accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Because that just looks at the severity of it, how much they wanted to win. Because remember those parts in the second act where they were just like, and this is where we found out that they really, this was more about police, you know, about the police. And then you're like, I cared about the youth, but I really want to know what the mind, if they could find one officer, mm-hmm. even if they weren't involved, it's like, what would go through the mind, whether, you know, because there's psychologists that work in every police department. So you're saying, like, when you're saying this, like, and when you're acting inappropriate, they have to have notes on this. They have to go through IA and understand, like, what would usually lead a person? What was there to gain? Like, my thing is usually to gain is that if you break open a case wide like this, like, you find, especially five in risk, because we're all in risk, but in risk black and brown youth, and you're like, hey, look, I found these fucking five rapists. I'm not going to become sergeant. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of bargaining chip they try to have all the time. Is that, and that's what the big thing is like, it's all the corruption. It's just like, you know,
yeah. The last couple things we watched were all police corruption at essence, and yeah. Like, at least partially, you know, the last few things.
And the great thing about this is like, we're living in a time where there's so many police dramas. Mm-hmm. So, like, if this would have come out in the 90s, nobody would have cared. But now it's like 2018. We've seen, each person in America has seen 100 episodes of CSI, not CSI, yeah. of Law & Order, and a CSI, yeah. maybe 12. All you know what I mean?
Technically makes you a detective. Yeah. Yeah. I think we can all agree.
Exactly.
I bet people have gone up on the stand. You know, because black people know, you know what a brother's been watching Law & Order when he says, excuse me, I know my rights.
I don't need to talk to you.
This is a falsification. And you're like, what?
You're like, is no one going to compare their statements? No one? Okay. Well,
he gets on the phone and actually calls somebody from like Law & Order. Can I stop the stabler? This is Weinstein. Oh, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? But that's the interesting thing about it is like looking at all them and looking at all the details of like what was happening with their life. Because when you have a court case, especially when you're dealing with juveniles, like, yeah, you can, like a lot of the time your life is turned upside down. Because it's not just about when you go to trial and you go to jail. It's about as soon as that trial hits, you barely can go to school. Essentially, you have a rape beef. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because I was in college and I had a rape beef. You know what I'm saying? And like, and I was, but
you did?
Oh yeah. Oh shit, man.
Oh,
yeah.
We got to get into this right now.
Yeah. I was raping a lot. I mean, you know.
I've heard the stories of you being raped. I didn't know that you were.
Oh no, man. No, the system is what I was talking about, brother. You got to listen, brother. Nah, I was in the dorms. I wasn't living in the dorms because I lived about 10 blocks away, and I was in my parents' house. And there was like I came in 1995 to state, so like. There was still like they had cut the football program and there was still guys there and like, you know, whatever, but like who gets kind of big dudes, you know what I mean? And, but there was just, I mean, a lot of big, this is a lot of people who gets look alike, you know what I mean? So what happened was this white girl, just one of the first times I'd ever seen white women be into young black men You know what I mean?
And San Francisco.
Yeah, it was wild. I had never met a Pog at that in the 90s. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Like, whoa, Pog. I don't know Pog.
Fat ass white girl. We're going to learn a lot today. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I collected Pogs.
wait, I would love if they sold Pogs to kids as Pogs. Like sexually inquisitive children. And like Pogs. Like, gets a bunch of young black kids on around. Nah, man, so there's one brother, like, we kind of looked alike, and he was dating someone, or like, you know, he went to a party with someone, like, and just some party, and then I guess they had hooked up, and the girl was high and shit.
Wow.
And she said it wasn't consensual, but, and then word got around after the weekend, and it was like, oh shit, you hear about John? And then, man, I heard say he might have, you know, raped this white girl. And I was like, what? Because I met him before, and he's a decent guy. So then I'm going to the dorms, and John, no one saw him. He was gone. Like, he was from the South. He was from Mississippi. You know, you guys.
Just left.
He was gone off campus.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going down there, gets to go study and meet some people and you know, and shit. And then I get approached about 80 feet from the entrance. And they're like, are you John? And I'm like, nah. And it's like, can you see some ID? This is why old right. black people, you gotta know, because old black people, or your mom always tell you, walk around with ID and $20. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. More than ID, the $20, you could rob mm-hmm. a white person and get $20. You know what I mean? It's like, so you sit there. You know, but then, so they sat me down, and they're like, you have no ID. And they're like, what's your social? And it's like, of course, you know your social. And that's like, I'm not gonna just give you my social freely. You know what I'm saying? So then we're gonna contact campus security. Because if you're not known, there was a young woman. We can't get the information. I said, oh, that white girl? Right? Like,
that Pog?
That Pog?
That Pog? Oh, Carol. Oh, man. Case closed.
Carol.
Dun. He redhead Carol. Like, the one that goes to the door sideways all the time. So, yeah, I was scared for my life, man. I was super scared because,
is
like,
the campus police that were coming up?
Yeah, so it was weak-ass police. Yeah. You know what I mean? Shorts, and they had no gun. They had flashlights and shit. Yeah. They were buff as fuck. They had this like dude that looked like a Navy SEAL and shit, and he was like, he wanted to bust me. And I went. The scary thing is even when you do right, the thing that happens to the black men in America, you constantly are bombarded with this idea that even if you are born, you try to do the right thing, you're just born a criminal. You know what I mean? You're born a crime. You're born a thug. Mm. And they were asking me so many questions. I even asked myself, "Was I?
What did I do?
Am I John?
I did have 10 minutes. I could have raped somebody. Oh, you know what I mean, like, I wasn't near the campus, but maybe I could have astral projected or something. Right. Like. But it was just like you get to that point, and then I could feel for these guys because like they try to look at all the different angles, and these guys, they think they're doing the right thing because they just want to pop the case and they want to understand, but they don't understand the ramifications of what it means. Mm-hmm. To even imply such a heinous crime, you know what I mean? And so when I was watching it with like a lot of intensity and to see about how they were dealing with it. Because when I was sitting in that chair, I was looking at my whole future. I was like, man, I'm out here. I'm a sophomore. I'm doing that shit. I'm in this stupid ass school, you know what I mean? Kind of shit. I could have gotten to Berkeley or you know, shit. I was there. I know my SAT scores were a little too low, right? So I was sitting there like, damn, I might go to jail. You know what I mean? That's all I was thinking about, right? Right. But I was feeling for him, man. I was feeling for him. I was thinking about, I need to call my mom, get a lawyer, the whole thing. But then it was like a half hour later, they were just like, this is not the guy. Because they finally ran my shit. And they were like, this is not him.
Mm.
And the great thing for surveillance.
Oh, yeah.
That
95 at a state school, they had surveillance?
Dude, they got funding. I don't know what happened. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like they cut the football team.
Yeah, they got cameras. Cut the football team, get cameras.
It's like, that's why, dang. It's like, yeah. You know what I mean?
No more ethnic studies, just cameras, just the surveillance state.
That would be so funny. That would be so funny if state colleges cut everything important just for like surveillance.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, because they cut so much shit for the library. It looks amazing. It's like some shit out of the Jetsons. You know what I mean? So, but that's what I was worried about, you know, looking at that, the lawyers. I think from that aspect, I mean, I'm glad they had this, like, the social psychologist to understand, like, what happens to people who, I mean, to these youth and what, and, like, in terms of, like, what would make them fall along with making these erroneous, like, falling with these erroneous statements
right.
earlier. That part was incredible because I would hear these stories from youth about whether it's the police or lawyers or DAs. Mm. That's the crazy thing about this one. DAs, sorry, the DAs, about lazy DAs, especially lazy New York DAs. There's a book about it. I forget about it. I'll tell you later. It's so hilarious about talking about when DAs became pieces of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we always see it. Like, they come in with a briefcase. Like, excuse me. And they just drop it. Like, is your name Watson? My name's Charlie. You know what I mean? It's like, sorry, wrong case. You know, and they leave. But this one is incredible to look at when they were in the courtroom and the guy said, we're going to lose.
Right.
You know, and with cases like that, you can do it. You know, you there's certain things that lawyers can do, even the shit is DA to freeze it up. But it gets new. It just felt like so off. Even when they had the time off, it's like that's what's so crazy about the system is that we all are in agreement that everything works is against us and it fatigues us. You know what I'm saying? And that's what's crazy about the legal system and the police system is that many people just know at this point that you're probably not going to win if you're black.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, and also that's crazy because remember that thing happened where they talked about same race rapes?
Yeah. Yeah, near the end they talk about that, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
The, well, someone getting raped and thrown off a building.
Yeah.
Like that was fucking insane.
My dad had talked about that.
I walked in a room and I could see that he was terrified. I could see him like shivering. I said, Kevin, I can't believe you saw this woman get raped. And he looked at me. He said, Angie, I didn't see it. And I said, Kevin, why did you say that then? He said, because he told me to say it so I could go home.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What did you guys make of like how they kind of were setting this thing up in the beginning? Also, like, first time I've ever known Ken Burns to just use hip-hop music in anything, but just like, here's Bernie Getz, here's all these other things, here's something on fire, here's blah, blah, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, they're just trying to set up this precedent of like... It doesn't totally make sense to me. Like, it's like, not like this is like a tinderbox waiting to happen. It's just like one bizarre case. It doesn't really, it ends up dealing with race relations in the sense of like this other stuff we're talking about, like media, like the representation of the kids and just like the corruption of the cops. But like trying to be like tie all these other things that were happening around the mid 80s into like what happens there. Is there a connection? Or maybe even the thing of like, oh, like real estate or not real estate, Wall Street, right? All this Wall Street money. And this woman is like a Wall Street person too. And it's like, they're trying to set up this dynamic of like, you know, I mean, the polarization of like social classes and stuff.
I tend to, I don't know if you guys ever should to see a lot of these like screenwriting books or documentary, like, you know, how to make a documentary and stuff. And it's like how you do these, like, there's these like kind of points, you know what I mean? You want to do to build character and story. Like, granted, like the woman was, if you get said without Wall Street, she just sounds like an everyday white woman who just went for a jog. And then, you have no reason to stay connected to the victim. Even though we all know probably that they weren't guilty, it's like you need, what is it called? Basically, you need these attachments, right?
Right.
So that, and also these things lend to what New York City is. Because this is a very New York City thing. So it's like the lady from Wall Street. You know what I mean? Oh, I know Wall Street. I understand.
I've heard of Wall Street.
Oh, yeah, Donald Trump wouldn't care about the woman getting thrown off the roof. He cares about this. Also, let's get into the Trump stuff, too. Yeah. This is like still timely.
That was the best. It's almost like he knew. He was like Biff from like Back to the Future. Right? No, he's a Biff. Like he just knew that like he went back in time and it's just like, I'm just going to put a full page ad and people are going to fucking love me. A full page ad.
Bring back the death penalty to the New York State, right? That's what it was.
Yeah. Support our cops and bring back the death penalty.
It's funny. I mean, I think it's funny about how many people were involved just for their own gain. I mean, once again, I guess it's one of those things where it couldn't be involved in the documentary, but in terms of like looking at if there was something we did, another documentary about Trump, is like that has to be, I guess, another sign of how corrupt he was. Mm-hmm. An opportunist, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Because New York opportunists are so much different than anyone, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I would love to do one on him, Al Sharpton, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And I was in here for a minute.
Yeah, he was. And that hair.
That hair. Yeah.
Oh, so happy that's involved.
Wasn't his hair in the credits?
Yeah, they got a co-producing credit. Yeah.
He was an EP on it. Yeah.
That tracksuit.
He was a big man back then, too. I forgot. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, New York City was criminal number one for a lot of Americans. You remember? Like,
oh, right.
It's the most dangerous city.
Yeah. I mean, there was like 500-600 murders.
They kind of show like that Giuliani thing coming in and like less crime now.
Yeah,
like,
he was the bald vampire sheriff that came in and fixed him.
He still is.
Yeah, I know. I hate
his
that
bottom
man.
Row of teeth is the jail.
Yeah.
These boys were inside Giuliani's mouth for 7 years.
That's how they get the kids. Like, hey, you want to go to Rikers? Yeah. I just get no Rikers, motherfucker. You
want to
go
to really
Giuliani's
mouth?
He did it. There's like all these stories and shit, man. Yeah. I'm glad to be out, man. The bottom of that molar. Yeah. Man, I saw a lot of shit down there.
Little shit.
I saw little shit in the molar, man. It was great. You need applause.
Lauren, what did you think of this film? Is this the first time you've watched it, or have you seen it before?
It was the second time. I hadn't seen it in a really long time, but, you know, watching movies like this just really piss me off, make me really upset, because it's obvious things that you would do as a cop.
Yeah.
You would think that you would do your due diligence. Like,
how did the DNA guy get used?
There's no DNA. There's six different statements from six different people, and no one's comparing notes. Like, this one has blue shorts on. This one has like long black pants on. And no one's saying like, were they even there? Were they that really pissed me off. Because I'm a detective, obviously.
Yeah, you watch so much.
I lose so much Law & Order. SVU.
This is Dick Wolf, by the way. This is Dick Wolf.
Yes. I love Dick Wolf. Yeah. I'm thinking about getting that tattooed on my inner thigh. thank you.
Did you just...
Paco's blushing.
Exactly. That would be great to see that in a woman's inner thigh. Yeah. Sure. Like, you know, I'm just like
executive producer. By, like on a tramp.
There's like you're hanging out with a dude that has that tattooed as a tramp stamp. Someone caught it like at a pool. I'll find it and send it.
We have
Bad Hat Harry.
I have Calvin pissing on Hobbs.
That's
perfect.
Like the card decal? Yeah,
yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's awesome tramp stamp.
I have a t-shirt I made of myself, which is Calvin pissing into the Duchamp urinal. So.
Oh. Okay, that's fancy. That is fancy. Jesus.
Shit.
He belongs. That's where it belongs. That's where that urine belongs.
And MSG money can get you some good tattoos.
See,
shit, where were we?
Ed Koch was mayor during this, right?
Oh,
or no?
Fuck that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Forever. 20 years of Mayor Ed Koch.
Yeah. What a weird
I trust
person.
My Morgenthau or whatever. He
trusts right.
That,
yeah,
that,
the prosecuting attorney. Yeah. Fucking Koch is such a weird fucking dude.
It's weird that it's Koch, but then the Koch brothers are Koch brothers. So
yeah,
it's spelled
true.
The same.
Yeah. But you're right. There was no.
No, I know. That's like, no, I was actually. I really
the
was
more
looking
you
at
know.
That.
I'm into spelling.
That was some real Farrakhan level word.
If you look at Coke. If you look at Koch.
Now, I understand. Now, Koch, Coach, same different. Coach Bag. Right?
Coach with Craig Nelson. Dick Van Dyke's brother, Jerry Van Dyke.
You understand? All these white men leading black men to the demise.
Pouring Gatorade on the head.
But no, it was interesting to think about like when people could admit their wrongs, you know, in terms of like looking at the corruption, looking at their involvement. And Dinkins.
Mayor Dinkins
was like, I think it's so great because
he became mayor right after this happened, right? 90, yeah.
And that,
during like the trial, years. But during the trial yeah. that was happening, yeah.
But that was funny that it just kind of goes went right over that
mm-hmm.
because it was just, and I just I love those dynamics we still play about black and white where it's just like, you know, oh, these white kids do not care, and Dinkins is like just sitting there the whole time like, hold my calls, please, you know, I gotta keep brushing my hair, you know, it don't matter, and it's like they'd even come back to, but the interesting thing I really think about is. I do feel like this documentary was incredibly powerful, and I really, in the sense of looking at, many times when I've watched these documentaries about police, people who have been falsely accused, and when they talk about what happens afterwards, you know what I mean? Like, they're like, it's, you know.
Like the appeal process and stuff?
Yeah. There's too much time. Sometimes there's a lot of time spent, like, what happens afterwards. Like, you know, Raheem gets out. He's trying to live a life. He mm-hmm. works at a Kragen. You know what I mean? And he's now. And you're like, another 20 minutes. And I think that's great. But I think this part about the appeal process was incredible. Because I think that in terms of not just looking at the wins, just looking at the whole process. Because I understand that, you know, I think it was incredible that the young man who did attack the woman did come forward.
Yeah.
You that know? Story is yeah, insane.
Because he's like runs into him. He's like, I saw the pain and in his eyes.
They had
like,
a fight before.
Over the TV.
Like,
the TV.
Jesus.
Yeah. They're fighting over watching MASH or something. And fucking, then he gets exonerated.
And he decides to come clean.
Yeah.
Honor amongst.
Right. Mateus.
Who would have thunk it, you know? I saw the sadness in his eyes because I fucked up his life, you know? Yeah. Decided to come clean.
Yeah.
Do you think there was an ulterior motive?
I mean, wasn't he in there for life anyways? Like, what the fuck else do you have to lose, right?
No, he was in there for double digits. Mm-hmm. So he was in there for a while. He was doing a long stretch. And
he's probably like, I don't feel like getting out of here and getting a job, making my own money and having to eat things, pay for food. So stay in this bitch.
But
forever.
Wait,
he was in for rape too, right? Because he was
the original.
Yeah.
He was that the Latino guy was the guy that did the crime.
Matias
Reyes. Yeah. But he was the East Side rapist.
Yeah.
But that's amazing that he came forward because. You find that a lot, though, because I would have youth and like when I would deal with like gang, when I was working with gang.
Yeah, talk more about like what. So how did you end up even working with youth and juvenile and stuff?
Oh, okay. So I started doing case management. And so what happened was I just started going towards just more organizations, like working more in community. And what happens, you just take on harder roles and, you know what I mean, and harder responsibilities. So I started working with more higher risk youth. So I just started with gang task force, working with kids in juvenile. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I started working with adults who were coming out of the system. And you find a lot of these cases. Like you would find every so often, I had a case one time where a youth had been pretty much falsely accused. He spent a majority of his life majority of his youth in juvenile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had dealt with one youth that, not to skip over him, is like these things are really common to the point of where, you know, your mistrust of the system leads you to understand that you don't have any fight in you, you know what I mean? And because of lack of resources, because what happens is that, you know, when we talk about kids who get out on bail, like I always thought this would be an interesting documentary about when they talk about people who get on bail. It's like it's an extensive process for some people to put up money and what happens.
Yeah,
to their
some
life.
Of these kids couldn't even get in out on bail. Yeah,
yeah, because they're putting up like when we watch these shows, we'll say like, oh, it's never like $1,000 with the standard of severity case. You got to put up your house, you got to sell your car, you got to steal a kidney, you got to do something else, you got to go out there. You might have to sell dope. I've talked to other social workers and people in probation where like one person might have to do time because they get the money to get a dude out mm-hmm. because you got to put up $20,000 and then grandma or $50,000 and grandma in the, you know, got in like put up her house and she, you know, and then even then, where's she going to stay? What's going to happen? And even then that takes a while. So grandma might have to sell her house, get below whatever it's worth or below, if you go to one of these shysters, like one of these realtors and developers and sell it. So then what happens then? If you ever sold your house, if that woman sold her house, she was always thinking like, I could probably make, let's say in San Francisco, I live in the Bayview. if I know anything about the market, I might get $250,000 to $1 million.
Right.
I might, and I move to Antioch. Mm-hmm. I'm living my life. Mm-hmm. Everybody's doing
Hercules,
good, right?
Wherever. Yeah.
Hercules. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Herc Tam. My uncle is on Hercules. Mm-hmm. He's out there, man. He's out there raving. Herc Tam raving. So it happens. It's like, no, he's not there. He's there with his wife, and he's there living in there. My cousins.
You can't be a rapist, but okay.
I mean, yeah, that's
true.
That is true.
Yeah, that is true.
We got to talk to him today. Got to get to the bottom of this.
Talk to Uncle Ted and see what he's.
Oh, actually, well, Ted is definitely.
He actually has the face.
Mm, of kind mustache. Of
because he has the Hulk Hogan. Oh, he has a blackout of the Hulk Hogan mustache.
Oh, what? Jesus!
I do not see those very often.
No,
this is beautiful. Show us a picture.
Like a 1970s I'll pull
it up. It's thick. It's like
FaceTime him.
It's like if one of the Whispers went to jail. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's mad thick. It's like the beginning of the McDonald's arches, but it gets turned black. You know what I mean? It gets super black, and he's like one of those guys that's like Aaron Neville shape.
Oh.
Like I got fat on top, but I got beef underneath. Like yeah. I'm a good piece of meat, but I'm fatty. You know, he's like barbecue, right?
So it's a brisket.
I'm the brisket.
I'm the brisket out there raving in Hercules.
Hercules brisket is a good stage name for someone.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think he opens for hamburger.
Hamburger.
Hercules brisket and no hamburger.
I'm doing it for Hercules brisket. He's a Greek black guy. Hercules brisket. It don't matter. And like so now, man. So that's what I find is so you know these intricate parts of like of what happens when you're dealing with the system is that like you have to you know put your house up, then you have to pay for it, then the after effects. I mean, like a show like Night of.
Yeah,
that showed a lot of what happened.
That's what I was thinking too. Like mm-hmm. the last couple of things yeah. I was watching, it's all like this. Like
that show's good.
Yeah.
I wonder if this.
If only John Turturro could have been there for these boys. Yeah.
Did he have psoriasis or something?
Yeah.
Like
yes.
He just sit there scratching his feet the whole time. Feet. Hey, let me talk to you, friend. I got there. Did you do it? It's like you hold his pencil, and the guy's like, putting Vaseline on his body. You know what I mean? Like, so.
But John Turturro in 1989 was not going to be defending these boys.
No,
running to the movie.
He was too busy having jungle fever.
Yeah.
He's in there.
He's saving Sal's Pizzeria.
It's in there. I would love. But that's the crazy thing about what we don't think about. It's like those are the parts of the documentary I always feel like I don't think it was, I think that it's still 4 out of 5 stars for me. But I like those are the parts I'd like to get hear something about. You know, like what happens to their lifestyle because once again when I would deal with these teens and they have to go to court and they have to be held up. I mean, sometimes you can't go back to school. And
yeah, one of those guys had to go to homeschool. Yeah,
you know, and he's sitting there and he's just like, and it's not, and with his accent, it gets sounded so fucked up. Because that was another thing too about the documentary. It was like gets the study of the New York teens, like because as West Coast people. You know, we kind of look like we're stoners and lazy, but we have good diction. You know what I mean? But it's like, hey, yo.
It's slower. Yeah.
You know, and with New York people, they always sound a little guilty. You know what I mean? So it's like, are you sure you didn't have a party? Did you see it? You know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And so, I felt for these kids because, like, what gets like in terms of looking at them and then the one guy's. His father left his mom.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
I was like, woo, this is so... Because we always this thing where black men don't stay in the family. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to go ahead and be fucked up, just go ahead and be at that level, dog. Your son is facing 5 to 7. Your wife is already dealing it. And you just decide, like, man, y'all...
You know what?
I don't think this is working. You know what I'm saying? I'm on Friendster, you know, right now.
I got to see what else is out there for me, because this isn't it.
Well, I'm trying to figure out who was really... I mean, when I think about even like with the West Memphis 3, the fact that they had like a documentary on it, like the year of the trial, there was people like in public, like supporting them. I don't know if there was that much support for these guys. Was there like much support outside the family?
Guilty.
Yeah, everyone assumed they
just
were guilty.
Just assumed they were guilty.
There was like, but not until.
Because they thought that the cops were doing their jobs, which surprised they weren't.
Well, the confessions didn't help.
Yeah, I mean, they really, like, screwed...
Their confessions against them. See, that's the other thing about, too, about
they're there for 16 hours. They don't have any...
Yeah, someone's there for 24 hours, right?
Yeah. I mean, their parents aren't there. They have no lawyers. And they're like, just say this and you can go home. Like, I want to go home, play video games, eat pizza.
It's almost like that thing of, like, you know, what's that story about, like, if someone comes to your door, like, you can... kills someone that you don't know will be killed, and then you get this thing, and do you have to say yes or no? Will you do it? And it's almost like they didn't even know each other, really. Those five guys, not Saw, but it's like it's Cameron Diaz, like the box or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay.
But it's like they're like in this situation, like you know, we know you didn't do it.
Right.
They said you did it, so you got to turn on them.
Yeah.
And then everyone's got these cockamamie stories that don't match up.
Yeah.
It's like the willingness to be like, okay, I'll you know, I'll play ball because like this is the only option I can see right now. Yeah.
Well, and again, if you're listening to this, do not talk to the cops.
Yeah, Paco knows. Don't talk to the cops.
Yeah.
We can stress that enough. Don't talk to the cops.
I wish they had like kind of fleshed out what happened to the cops after. Like, were there any repercussions?
No, they said at the end. They said in the end that all the
cops all got raises.
They all. You know what? You know, so
probably.
Funny. I mean, it's like, okay, here's the funny thing about that. Thinking about like if that's not so off to say is that if they got raises, because when I was in San Francisco, I was talking to this police sergeant. He would come to this place into video a lot, and he would talk to me about like what was the horrible things that happened in the police departments and whatnot. And that idea of protecting your own does lead to something like protection against, like, gives you a buffer if you get in trouble again, or I understand, like, if you get in real trouble, it's like, hey, we got to move you to a Sacramento, you know what I mean? Kind of shit, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why his accent in San Francisco, but yeah, he's been transferred a lot.
Yeah. From the East Coast to the West Coast.
It's like, I got nowhere else to go.
I'm from Hayward.
It's like, hey, it's like, we have a small Italian family in Hayward. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I get off the bike.
Tim Mescal, forget about it.
Fuck you, Fremont. You know, but it is that idea, the payment, it comes in the form of like protection. You understand? Like, you can't.
Like the Catholic Church. Yeah.
Ooh, damn.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Moving people around.
Yeah. Just gonna move you to the school.
Yeah.
Damn, dog, you went from George Chen to Tom Hanks. You know what I'm saying? I feel like this is like, what's that movie he does?
Let's talk about it.
What's the
Tom
movie?
Hanks?
What's the movie he does in
Castaway?
Like Spotlight?
What, no, the religious movie where he's always breaking down the Vatican, where he's always breaking down the Catholic Church.
I don't know.
What's it called? Yeah.
The press one.
No.
The Post?
No.
Look, we're not gonna know.
He's done three of them.
Yeah,
Da Vinci Code. Da Vinci Code. You're comparing
me to Da Vinci Code.
You crack something open, you find maybe there's a connection between the valid
the cops and the Catholic
to the Catholic Church.
We've already said too much.
The comedy story is about to be burned.
Let's just write the rest of this down. Exchange it.
The engineer's gone.
Prison
right now.
Case.
Smuggling.
I'm gonna pass you a note with some names. You circle the ones. We're cracking all the cases right now.
This isn't
even a cold case. I mean, this is like they got
this could have been a good episode of Cold Case. This was an episode of Law and Order, though.
Oh, it was.
Yeah,
oh,
it
was.
Did.
Who
yeah,
played he, who? Because I want to know, like if we were to cast it, like, who's who?
Who was the kids? It was just, like, some regular old kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think there was nobody of, like, any fame. It's like, was that guy on The Wire? No, it was just, like, a bunch of, like, whatever. But I think...
start somewhere.
You know what? Do you...
You would make a fine
rapist on Law and Order SVU, Kasim.
I think most comics would make a good one because we're all.
Yeah.
But a lot of us don't have enough ambition.
I mean, that's a lot of work.
So you start running, you're like, oh, God.
Ugh.
Most of us don't, you know.
Character actors.
Just
that's what we are.
All of your sweat would just be DNA.
I took my vitamin half an hour before I got here.
The vitamin that's doing.
No, I know. When I take my vitamin, I took my vitamin. And I got ready, but it was like I got these new organic vitamins. They're like $50.
Kasim is looking very fit.
I'm trying. Yeah.
The most I've seen Kasim.
I'm trying to, bro.
Vitamin called?
What?
Cocaine.
Vitamin C.
Cocaine.
You know what? Y'all, just because y'all don't care about your, like.
I care about my health.
I had a kidney stone. I had a beet juice yesterday, so.
Yeah. Remember I gave you tickets to a show because I had a kidney stone? Or something
you did?
Like that? Yeah, it was like right after that happened or something.
You did?
I gave you Two Dope Queens tickets.
Look at this ungrateful bastard.
I know.
Damn, I didn't know it was kidney stones.
Well, we can talk about it later.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get into it. But getting back to that, I think that the whole thing we're thinking about is that you bring up a good point looking at, we were talking about what the payment is, what these people get. We talk about what the payment is, and I think that's a big part of it. They did cover of it when they talked about when they, who, like, what what happened to the cops, which obviously they all protected each other. And I understand that they said they all they gave him was simple. Gave him the simple, you know, questions. And the reporter, the great thing about that reporter.
The New York Times reporter.
That was the one where I thought they could have gotten one more, if they could have been able to talk to her or get somebody to look into look at what their opinion would be. Because for her, she was going to be the biggest sacrificial lamb of it all because she put everything her career's on the line and then she just sticks to it. I mean, it's like her OJ lie. You know what I mean? She gets out there, gets saying like still
the blonde reporter.
She doubled down.
Yeah, the one with the who had the crazy,
the feathered hair. Kind of
No, it was permed.
The prosecutor.
The prosecutor. Prosecutor.
Yes.
She doubled down on that.
End, she was like, yeah, right.
She's like, they did it.
Right.
Remember, like, when the cops were like drinking at a bar? They're like, they were drinking at this bar, like Elaine's, like the day after the arrest or something, because they're like,
it's
like mission accomplished. They were like mission accomplished.
Good job, everyone.
They celebrated the day before. Okay. That's when I got really, after watching this last time, I was like, Jesus Christ, man. You know what I mean? Just understanding like that's the great thing about the confidence, you know, the system has about protecting them. And
do they not have guilt? Do you think that they're just like drinking themselves to death? They're probably all dead anyways.
No.
They probably feel like
Final Destination.
We kept society together. Whatever. It's like the same quote from when we were doing Cropsy with this dude. It's just like, you're a martyr for security, basically. Yeah. If someone who goes to jail, it's like, we're like 80% sure you did
right,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't need to be 100% sure.
Just like 14.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'll work.
They got some 14%. They got some kids off the street. End of Juliana's teeth where they belong.
They're right in between each one. Call my mama, man. I'm in between some spinach and 13 other guys.
It's called tartar control.
They're going to floss me in here.
I want us to remember what happened that day and be horrified by ourselves, because it really is a mirror on our society. And rather than tying it up in a bow and thinking that there is something that we can take away from it and we'll be better people, I think what we really need to realize is that we're not very good people. And we're often not.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What I thought was individually, each person had an adequate amount of backstory and care and attention. You know what I mean?
Because
I'm like,
we got a baby photo. Everyone got their baby photos in there.
No, I know. Yeah.
Because
they're people.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. That's odd. Yeah.
They're just not criminals. They're children.
Yeah.
I mean,
they were so young.
They were so young. And
they look
like,
old.
I guess 16. You could be tried as an adult at 16.
But what's crazy is that, like, you look at a situation like that Ethan Couch kid who was like 16, got drunk, killed like 7 people, and then they like,
they're
like, let's just make up a whole ass word to get him
Affluenza, right?
He's too spoiled to know right from wrong.
Right. Yeah. And that he has a lot to give to society, so you don't want to lock him up too long.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to ruin his career. In his future.
Right.
Now he's just on the lam. No, he got released, actually.
He got released, yeah.
Okay.
He only got arrested because he ran away to Mexico.
Right.
Yeah.
That's fucking nuts, man.
But we can't, like, sample some DNA and, you know,
have you ever,
compare some statements.
Have you been wrongly accused of anything? That you can share?
Actually, you know, I was in high school and some chick said that I threatened to beat her up, kill her family, whoa, and set her house on fire. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a bummer. And then I got called into the principal's office and the principal was like, she started it off with, I know black people. And I was like, oh no, this is not going to go great.
From Redondo Beach or something?
I was in Torrance. I was going to a school in Torrance. Yeah. I know black people. And I just kind of like.
Anyone in Torrance knows black people.
I was like, I tuned it out. I was like, well, this isn't going to be good. This is going to be an interesting phone call to my mother.
Yeah.
This is going to be great. She didn't even ask me if
write
I did.
Write a memo. Got to write a memo.
Because she knew I didn't. Because I don't talk about it before. I'll just fucking do it.
No telegraph.
I'm not going to warn you. Yeah. Bitch, I'll just show up at your house. No, I'm just kidding. But, like, for real, that really fucked me up. For, like, I got in trouble for that shit.
Well, how old were you?
I was, like, 15.
Oh, jeez.
Just because I told her to leave a door open in the lunchroom. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was a threat. That's a threat. Leave the door open.
She was she said she was going to kill me and my dog and set the house on fire. I was like, girl.
It's crazy because, like, I'm watching you guys, you know, be amazed. You know, by her story, which is, it's pretty compelling, you know.
Yeah.
But I've known her for years, so I feel like she did do it.
So, how do you guys know each other? That's also my other question. Because are you guys going to do a podcast together other than this one? Or is this the pilot? Are we doing the pilot right now?
This is the,
the pilot episode.
It's like how.
Incidental documentary.
You do not want to use this as your sizzle reel.
Oh, you're asking for real?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So when I was in San Francisco,
he was my drug dealer.
All right.
Obviously.
That vitamin he's taking.
I will give you
the Koch cane that he's been supplying.
Is that what we're talking? The Koch cane?
Koch cane.
Koch cane. Koch cane. Okay. I think, so when I was in San Francisco, I had known, I don't know, I think I knew Lauren through the internet.
Yeah. Okay. We were internet buds for a while.
Because she's, I don't know. I think she said something really funny
Tinder.
Now, this is years ago, bro.
I would have swiped left. I'm actually just going to deactivate this whole entire bitch.
She said something. I think it was. Yeah, it was. It was Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I added. I got to go scroll because I think I messaged her and she was really funny. Mm-hmm. And I added, sometimes you know how it is when you see people who are like non-comics or podcasters or writers, but then they're so funny that you know that if they wanted to or if they were led that direction, they could maybe do pretty well. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I could see it's really funny. Then I followed her on Tumblr.
I'm a waste of time. He knows.
Mm-hmm.
We all do.
Well, no. She is. A large part of knowing her is a waste of time. And because you know what it is? It's like, she's like what you see a lot of right now on Instagram, like young, pretty, light skin, curly hair.
No, 60.
She's actually, her face is pulled all the way. That's not her hair. It's like you pull it back.
It's a clip.
It's a wig.
There's a huge balloon knot.
I have a chip clip holding my face back. I'm actually just Death Becomes Her.
She's just, that's all it is. And I always thought she was really funny. And I thought, like, from meeting her and talking to her, it was always it was always fun. You know what I mean? So I was like, okay, well, before I got out of here, I was like, okay, I'm going to do a podcast. But I was always against it because I think majority of because podcasts are cool.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
podcasts
are
cool.
Look, how long did it take us to get here today?
I was shocked because as much as we've planned to do this,
I know.
That it was still getting a message from you.
I know.
And I didn't know what, but you guys.
We just try to maximize our time here, you know.
But the thing of, so we decided that I was going to do a podcast because I like podcasts, but I think being famous for a podcast is stupid. You know what I mean? I think a lot of podcasts.
Well, that's been our show.
But I think a lot of podcasts are stupid because it's like the idea is that you put together this idea and it's not, you don't put your all into it. So the ones I listen to really get me up in the morning. So I was like, I want to work with somebody that is incredible. And I was like, I really do like and respect
Lauren.
Lauren.
I was talking about
Terry Gross. I was on Pause of Gods, but then But yeah, I was gonna do that, and then but then I moved down here. But then I, you know, but I know she's down here, so it's just like form like Voltron and make like the best, you know, and make some. And what we have planned, I think is gonna. I honestly,
we
say,
have a plan.
Uh oh.
She's finding Lauren's finding out about this, this right now.
This is the podcast. This is the yeah. This is it.
Right? Do you guys have a name?
Me and Paco are on it?
No, it's three. It's reversed.
My initial name was gonna be White Slavery.
Nice.
I won't be on that one.
Well, it's not about race. It's more about a it's like it's a bigger concept. You know what I mean? It's a bigger idea. You know
I'm
mean?
Back on board.
Where we actually enslave people. Oh. That's the whole show.
Butlers.
Oh, nice. Yes.
A butler show.
Listen, I could use an indentured servant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
My car needs to be
what
washed.
Would you do with a white slave?
Ooh, first, my car is filthy. Mm. I need it detailed.
Paco, what are you doing after this?
Also, I
Paco's really
steal.
Not white. Paco was raised by black people, so he's really like kind of light Creole.
That's right.
You know I'm what
light
I'm saying?
Creole. Light Creole.
You know, yeah. He can do the voice. He got the whole thing. He probably can make greens.
Oh, I can make greens.
What?
Mm-hmm. And
okay,
Paco
we
got to
talk
has,
about this.
Paco's dick is black. His body's white. That's it's right. Very odd. Yeah. It's really weird. Dog. Yeah. I mean,
that's so why you're it.
The doors at the Punchline bathroom need to be fixed.
Yeah. My look says Biden. My dick says Magic Johnson.
There's a lot of sick women out there. And somewhere he has a gay son.
Yes, I
but
do.
A lot of movie theaters and a Starbucks that's pretty cracking on Fridays.
Does Magic Johnson have a gay son?
Yeah.
EJ.
What?
Oh, yeah. Fierce.
Oh, really?
Do people still say that?
Sure.
Yeah, probably.
Fierce Johnson?
Fierce Johnson.
That's his actual name. that's his other son's name he doesn't talk about. I mean, you know that Magic Johnson has to be sitting in his house today just like looking at his life. I mean, like, damn, man. Yeah, I won these championships.
I got HIV.
I got 58 button suits. And I got a pussy popping ass son. I did pretty good for myself.
You're listening, Magic Johnson.
And his wife. No, better than his wife. Who never talked to Cookie Johnson?
Cookie.
They're not divorced. They're not divorced, dude. Uh-huh. That's the weird thing.
Wow.
And I wonder, do they still have sex?
Sure.
I bet some like Will Smith, Jada Pinkett shit going on.
They have sex.
They do it fast.
they have sex with their other partner.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I didn't know you speak in asterisks sometimes.
All the time. Expect it.
That would be really interesting if you did that underneath it all. They had some sort of like weirds, like
they want they have to like Skype each other while it's happening or something.
Yeah, or like maybe there's someone like yeah, like that. Or I would not because I think Magic is at a point where he probably has some sort of agreement. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the fact that he has HIV and it's like, you know, he said he don't have it no more.
Yeah.
You know,
he's free.
He's rich. You can do any, you can fix any problem when you're rich. Duh. Affluenza, AIDS.
Yeah. Yep.
I love that.
Fierce Johnson.
That would be his response. They're like, man, I'm rich. I ain't got no HIV.
I ain't got no HIV.
I gained 80 pounds. I got all these suits. I ain't got no HIV.
I am thick, okay?
It's like, but back to the case. The case was great. I think that the bigger thing was, I do think that if they could have talked a little bit more about, I think this about this interesting disparity, what happens between same-sex rape and interracial rape, because just like, and they brought it up to Emmett Till, that was great because I think there was this, those were all the links that brought it together to make it a strong documentary. Because really at the end of it, without those historical links, I mean, you really understand that that was the Ken Burns isms, you know what I mean, or the Ken Burns, those were the kind of elements that I was looking for, and like, kind of like when you watch a man from The Ringer,
Bill Simmons,
you know, Bill Simmons does something, he really understands like how it ties into history, but I think with the whole idea of like that, because for black people, we understand what who Emmett Till is, but we have to understand like how history keeps repeating itself over and over, and the sickness and the cancer of racism or the constructs of racism in this country. But looking at Emmett Till, It's something that, as a black man, I think about jokingly and seriously a lot, where even if you're with a white person, you just kind of wonder, like, if you do something, because if you do something that's off-putting to them, or if something happens, you know, you worry about, will your opinion be counted, you know? Mm-hmm. And for something like Emmett, where I think...
Well, and then there was the recent news,
she
right?
She recanted
her test, her... She admitted she lied. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so fucked up.
it is fucked up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I think that's the whole thing, is like understanding that in the history of, in within, for as a black man and trying to navigate through America, you constantly have to be on watch about, and this is no offense, but like the actions of white women. You know, even though outside the circle of white and male, whatever the power of the circle of whiteness, you know, there's people who are on the fringes all the time, and women are, you know, definitely right on the periphery, right there, right at the border. But it's like, when there's so many cases, you just grow up hearing about, like, just, you know, even old adages, black man, if a white man says something, you better run. You know, it don't matter. And you understand that for this case alone, I mean,
The concept that it's a white woman that's a victim is sort of like weaponized in its way.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like that. It even goes so far. Like, remember that old Patrice O'Neill bit where it's like he talks about like making sure that he doesn't like anger a white woman or something. Or no, he doesn't want. He doesn't litter.
Oh right, yeah, because he doesn't want to get DNA.
And it's like, you're the Pepsi Cola, lands like some dead white one. Now you're the Pepsi Cola. That stuff was so funny.
Yeah,
because you always read a case every few years that's like some black man trying to flee his innocence, and I just think that, like, for juveniles, one article I read was talking about one detractor was saying that one of the things was that helped them was that they were juveniles, and the fact that they could sit there and say that the intentions of a youth would not be to rape, and probably they would have could have gotten off without that evidence. I thought that was so much bullshit, because it's just so much sore. Like, even in the juvenile justice system, white kids are afforded so there are more criminal defense attorneys for white youth in affluent neighborhoods than black kids all the time, because all the ones for youth get recycled over and over and over, which leads to the fatigue.
Burnout, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, that's the whole part about the system, is the burnout of the system. You know what I mean? And I really think that Ken really tried to speak on that a lot. You know what I mean? And I think the idea is that what the interesting thing too is, like, it gets births these other focuses, is like, looking at, like, even the burnout of the people involved in these cases, like, a lot of these young men got college degrees.
Right. I didn't really, that they stopped that program, so you couldn't even do that anymore, but that they got it right at the...
That happened in the mid-90s, where a lot of these programs got rid of the weight rooms, because you were having too many uprisings, whether it be structural, political, or not, and you get seeing... They were just threatened. There's nothing scarier. They say there's nothing scarier than a big black guy, but there's nothing scarier than a big black, educated black guy. Right. You know what I'm saying? And guess the thing that they got rid of? Weight rooms, libraries, especially law books. Those were, my sister went to law school, and we talk about this, about how many cases come up where it was just the fact that, it wasn't even thousands. You just had, over the course of time, you've had, you know, in the hundreds of criminals, I mean, of people or people who are planning to be criminals, get out of jail. Because they could
write or learn in jail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Learn how to appeal and stuff.
And they found some loophole, because they were supposed to have certain kind of books in the libraries. And they just utilized them. And it was, and it's just so interesting. And I guess the idea was that they were having it so where criminal inmates were coming together to make groups to help get everyone out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like that paranoia of what I think a lot of white men in power, political power, feel, or in the criminal justice system, fear, you know.
I just remember hearing like a Terry Gross interview with someone who was like in prison, who was the guy who became like a screenwriter, and he would start writing everyone else's appeals for them. It's just this one guy, and he got a bunch of people out based on that. Yeah, I think maybe Danny Trejo was one of the guys who got out. But would you say, like, this is a film that you would ask people to see now, like how it relates to all these issues about like I guess police corruption, and is it something you'd say, like, you have to watch this? It's not necessarily for an entertainment value, but just for an educational value of, like, looking at how it breaks down the system.
Yeah, I would do that, because there's some, you know, what I'm always interested in trying to look at is youth need to have there are some schools that introduce criminal justice classes, you know, or an element into it, usually private schools, but some thriving public schools will have a class about law. And I think that if we could do that widespread, we would have to take a look at inequalities for juveniles in the justice system. But use this as a, it's a pivotal case, you know what I mean? Because number one, it looked at about police corruption at that level, you know what I mean? And so looking at that, but understanding that, number two, looking at the appeal process, but number three, looking at how and within the cases that are pending now, and then they're still being upheld, and the motions that are being used to not even bring these to trial, so these people can't get paid, because they're talking about not just $1 million, $2 million. I mean, we're talking about tens of millions of dollars for each person, mm-hmm. you know, and just understanding that it will have people who are still working for the force. I mean, there are some, I mean, they're old as fuck, but that's the bigger thing here. It's all about mm-hmm. like, you know, it's about destroying, sometimes it's personal, where these people think about it's destroying their personal legacies or looking at putting a brighter eye about the system, about what it was. But what the interesting thing will be is about, it's actually not dealing with the embarrassment of how it comes from the top down, about how much lack of concern, non-observance about corruption, but also the treatment of Black people in America. And that's the bigger thing. And it's psychological, but at the really core of it, it's just sheer laziness. And it really shows that how much we don't care about youth and how much we don't care about Black youth. You know what I mean? Because these are grown men, and many of these men, even with degrees, are, you know, you could tell. I read the articles afterward, I love the documentary. It's like many of them are just living. Mm-hmm. But who knew what they could become? I mean, the one brother, Youssef, mm-hmm. let's just go by appearances. Like, guess you see him, you're like, wow, that brother really is, he came out pretty sharp. I mean, if we're mm-hmm. just going by, mm-hmm. guess, you know, I mean, and I say sharp meaning that he doesn't seem to have a New York accent. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, it's just like, hey, I'm a lawyer now. Really, are you? You know, mm-hmm. he doesn't have, it's like, you know, I'm a hood lawyer, though.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? I'm Michael Cohen.
My policy's no snitching, motherfucker. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, and it's like, I just think when I looked at them, because like when I looked at all of them as men, you could really, especially when you deal with men who have been in the system,
right?
You can really tell by sometimes you just even walk and carry.
The way Corey Weiss, that's what I was saying, like he just feels like he's still shell shocked mm-hmm. by the whole thing. Yeah.
Think about it. I mean, think about, like, I even thought about when I was going to go to juvenile, I got caught for graffiti. And I thought about like all my homies that were coming back from juvenile and even from jail, about what happened. You know what I mean? And we joke about prison rape and we talk about this and all that and the food and all that stuff. But it's really about you know, your freedom, your civil liberties taken away from, and you know, you could be on the outside and be locked in your own personal prison, emotional, psychological, you know, whatever, but you know, you have the options are right in front of you, right outside the door. But mm-hmm. when you're dealing with people who are in the joint, I mean, you walk differently. You know, you see the world through, it gets like, most of the time you're seeing the world gets through small windows. And your whole idea changes. Like the idea, like when some of my homies would get out, they can't look you in the eye like the guys talked to them. Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Think about it like just that way. I mean, it's like talking to Jesse Elias. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like no offense to Jesse Elias. I don't know beef with Jesse Elias.
Yeah, no, you don't.
And the Spectrum community. it's crazy to think about and how you deal with people who are in positions of power. Like my homie came out, Theo, he said like, you talk to anybody. He said he was getting a cell phone. He couldn't look the woman in the eye. And because he wanted a cool phone. You know what I mean? And he was like, he just looking down. The woman would be like, can you look at me in the face? It's just that over time. And then you just keep, and the thing that happens is that people miss going home. That level, because you see how it happens. You think about the dysfunction that happens in your life all the time. And if you see you have recidivist behavior, you kind of wonder if you just, is it pattern recognition or do you enjoy having these events in your life? Because I was thinking about that recently in therapy, like just about partners I've had in my life and everything. Do I just enjoy, is there something about me that
it recreates something? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, is it the fact that you don't see yourself as being widespread, you know what I mean? And a lot of time you just need someone in your life, or you just need to kind of take hold, or you need to see some failure in trying to make your change. But a lot of guys that come out of the system, I mean, you know, the world is telling you, the world is your oyster, your right. ceiling is high, and your ceiling was 6'5", yeah. you know what I mean? It's like 7'6", something like that. Like, it's like,
oh, in the actual jail.
The actual jail, yeah. Over, you yeah. know what I'm saying? And that's the crazy thing about it. That's why I was more or less looking at this third time watching, like, damn, you could really feel like the confusion. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because I have homies that come out and be like, yo, like when you're in there for a while and you're seeing guys like just get stabbed, you know what I'm saying? Or same-sex relationships or selling drugs or, you know, and or like stuff like even the simplest things. I remember this one dude came out and he had talked about, it was after a show. I said, what's the craziest thing you ever saw, like thing in jail? He's like, yo, you think that's crazy? It's like, if you don't get conjugals and then you see female guards. Uh-huh. They'll have relationships, you know, to get like actual relationships for money or for power, or like guys will be like, yo, I'll kill your brother if you don't suck, you know, whatever. Right. And or just to be there and just to make the inmates mad. You know what I mean? And it's like, but just beyond all that, just he said something like, I'm doing a 10-year stretch. I'm off in here. I got no family, no this. And you don't think like you could go 6 months in the outside, not have a woman in your life or a man or whatever, and be like, oh, I don't know. You know, but if you're doing 10 straight.
Yeah.
And you know, and you seeing some, you walk past something, you just see a woman, you know, and you get, you're like, damn. He said, that shit. He said, I went to my son, I was crying. Mm-hmm. And then you get out and you don't even know how to act. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what, swipe right on the thing? What? Mm-hmm. And you got to meet her for coffee?
And one of those guys was a registered sex. He had to register all the time. Right. And every I wonder month. If that got like did you, that get taken care of? It must
have
been
expensive. It's crazy, like, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, it's like when you have to go to doors and say you're a registered sex offender, right, George?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very similar. Very similar.
That's why he moved down here.
The bald head doesn't help anything. He's a monk sex offender. It's crazy right now.
I can wear wigs. Yeah, the Central Park Five, guys. We really did it. Yeah. We really got through a discussion about that really got into a lot of questionable areas.
It got out of hand.
But, Ken Burns' 2012 documentary, we think that everyone should see it.
Yes, I think everyone should see it, yes.
So that you know what it's like.
Lauren, do you have any parting words?
No.
Podcaster Lauren Stanton.
It's fair my enough. First one nailing it.
Yeah,
fair enough. Awesome. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Kasim.
All right, thanks a lot. It's been really great seeing you guys down here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, because George, I barely don't see you a lot.
So thanks guys, this was awesome, and we'll talk to you
thank
soon.
You Comedy Store.
Cool.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com.
We love your support, but we also love your money. Donate today to SupDoc through our Patreon.
And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
If you want us to cover a doc, have suggestions for guests, or you just want to reach out, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.